From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
And I'm Pete Stoughton.
Our next guest, Keel Bergen, is an entrepreneur, activist, mother of three, author, and filmmaker. Her story of survival and self-discovery has inspired a life dedicated to impacting tens of thousands of women across the globe. She served in leadership roles on the boards of multiple nonprofit organizations that empower women. She's written a memoir now called Holy Unraveled that chronicles her upbringing in a Catholic cult under the unforgiving eye of her abusive father. She endured a rape, the subsequent downward spiral through alcohol and drugs, and the eventual survival and thriving and becoming the woman she is today. We're so pleased she could join us. Keel Bergen, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much for having me.
Wonderful to have you. Your book, boy, both of us could not put it down yesterday. We were fighting over it, in fact. And there, you know, where to start with this? And I guess I'll go to this place. One of the first things that you mention is a Catholic cult. However, as I was reading your book, I felt it was more about an abusive father than it was about connection to some sort of religious background that had been twisted. Would that be a fair characterization?
I think it would be, Lynn. I think my dad used that Disciples of Light as a vessel to do kind of what he wanted, because he was one of the leaders of that movement. It was in the Charismatic Renewal movement in the 70s, and I just think he used that as a position of power, really. But it took me decades to figure that out.
Yes, and you know, it's so interesting now that you are in a position of empowering women and helping them to establish their own voice, that to a certain degree, even though you were so strong, you were so resilient, and you were quite rebellious, you never really stood up to your father.
No, my kind of agreement with myself was to look him in the eye all the time while he was hurting me, but there was no real standing up to him. If you've read the book, it would get worse and worse if I tried to do that. And so, but I do want to say that, you know, I believe that we're all here for a reason, and if we can take our trauma, because I've been through a lot of it and I've healed a lot of it, if we can take our trauma and turn it into something beautiful, like, don't let it win. Don't let it take over your life. All of our childhoods had difficult things in them. Mine may have been really difficult, but I've never met anyone who didn't have difficulty in their childhood. But to really work on that and turn it into something as beautiful as it can be.
And I think as we both kind of read through that, your book, it definitely, I think you brought the readers along to see that beauty. And yet, so many of your reviews are focused on the negativity and the, you know, some of the reviews said horror and graphic. And I that didn't come across to me as I read it. What's your response to that?
Yeah, there have been a few that have said, oh my goodness, there's, you know, it's too much. And I understand that. I think you have to be at a certain level of healing before you can talk about your own pain. And I read into those to say, you know, a lot had gone on in their life and they're not ready to kind of relive it. Because I think as the reader, as the author, it was very important for me to not save the reader and say, okay, I'm fine, but instead to bring them along with me so that you could feel what it felt like to be there. And so I think for some abuse or trauma victims, it was too much. Mm. But for everyone that was too much, there are, you know, I've gotten 50 emails that say, thank you, because this sparked a conversation I needed to have with my mom, or this helped me to write down what actually happened to me, and this helped me get a therapist. And so that's why, I mean, the why of why I wrote it is so that others would tell their stories, and especially the ones that they don't want to say out loud, because that's a gift to yourself. And it will also really help others if we start talking about our pain and releasing that shame and the fear and all of it that goes with it.
We have in Utah in 2002, there was a young girl, Elizabeth Smart, who was kidnapped and experienced again some really horrific tragedy.
Yeah.
And she also echoed this, you know, moving through and past the horrors and into a place of, you know, peace and happiness and not allowing her captors to conquer her in that way. It's similar. It sounds like a similar movement for yourself. How does one work through that? And how? What would you tell someone on air that you would share with them to get them to that place?
Yeah, that's a great question and a really important one. All of those things that we're not talking about are affecting us consciously or unconsciously. And if we can get to the place where we can share that, and I don't mean on a broad, it doesn't have to start on a broad stage. You know, the Me Too movement is great, but I think some of those people need to have had some therapy before they come out and say, he did this and he did this, because there's got to be a certain level of healing before you can come out and talk about it, or else it won't be able to help you. It'll just re-traumatize you, and it won't be able to help others. And so my recommendation is to find a few great friends and start sharing with people you trust. And also, I've had the great benefit of the last 12 years to do EMDR therapy, which is an interactive psychotherapy, which revolves around eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing. And it's helped tremendously with the trauma. I no longer have a trauma response when I talk about these things. I have a service response. I feel in service to tell people now so that they can release whatever shame and fear and pain they have.
If you're just joining us, our guest is Keel Bergen. Her book is Holy Unraveled. And that's holy with a WH, in case you're wanting to look it up. It's interesting that Pete brought up Elizabeth Smart, so I'll continue on that vein a bit. One of the things was when Elizabeth Smart, and I'm not sure how familiar you are with her story, but once she was recovered and rescued, she immediately started talking about it. You, however, and no doubt as a victim of a rape that your parents suppressed, even though your family doctor said there was a forced sexual encounter and wanted to help your parents deal with it, they suppressed it, so then you suppressed it, but it comes out later, and this is I'm wondering how you communicate this to people to not suppress it and not hold it in, because the result and the outcome of that is going to a very dark place. Can you talk about that?
Sure. First, I want to address the Elizabeth Smart part. I honor her. I have nothing but incredible respect. And I'm hoping that what happened with her is that as soon as she was released, she had that support. And was held in a beautiful container of love and healing. I didn't find that for myself until decades later. And so I suppressed it and kept it all in. I wish that there had been more people talking about abuse and trauma and neglect and, you know, and self-worth when I was, I wish I had bumped into those people and more people were talking about it in the media like you are, because I didn't have that until it was mid to late 20s when I really realized if I keep going down this trajectory of self-destruction, I'm going to die. And it was because I was keeping all of that in, and because I needed to find friends who I could talk to and people who loved me. And I finally did, and I'm really grateful for that, at a place called Madonna House. That started my healing. And I think if people can find that sooner, then the path doesn't have to be as long and arduous as it was for me.
Yes, exactly. I want to ask you about EMDR, and it's my understanding that if you experience a trauma, there's a certain period of time that a certain type of therapy like EMDR can be administered. And then it's almost like once, something like 2 or 3 months lapses after the trauma, then you have to be dealt with, you know, in therapy in a different sort of way. So it shows the need for the immediacy of dealing with the trauma immediately. Can you talk about what happens physiologically when you hold in trauma like that?
Well, I think fundamentally for me, it's that you don't know how to be yourself or operate in the world in an authentic way. So it looked on the outside that I was doing just fine after I left Madonna House, when I had felt that love and support and healing. But I still had a lot of healing to do because I was putting on a face a little bit of, okay, now I go get a job, now I have a career, now I start a company, now I sell a company, now I take it public. It looked fine on the outside. But it's what's going on the inside that's more important, because the inside and the outside have to be congruent in order for us to have that happy, wonderful life that we all search for. And so it's taking that time for self-care, for therapy, for friendships, for the things that you love and desire to do in your life, and incorporating those and not just following, you know, the normal life that you're supposed to follow, but instead looking inside and seeing what really you're meant to do in your life, and not, and trying really hard not to carry from our past, because what we carry from our past really affects our present and our future.
And I hate to go back to the book, but it sounds like there might be a relationship here, because you end your book with a visit with a girl, and someone says howdy to her. And then it's almost like you continue this, and she says, hi. And how does this tie into what you're continuing your work with? Do you know what I'm talking about there?
I do. I watched people come in and out of Madonna House, and it was as if it was like the best education I had ever gotten, because I watched people just purely love and serve. And I believe that that's our mission in life. If we can all just say, what is the little bit I'm going to do today to serve my fellow people, to serve the people around me, to serve my family, to serve my friends. And I really, when that girl got off the bus, I was like, oh, it's her turn. And it's my turn to go elsewhere and do it. So she's going to come and get it here, and I'm going to try to bring it elsewhere. And if we all do that, what a wonderful, wonderful world that we could live in, where we all feel more connected to each other. And most importantly, more connected to ourselves, because we have no secrets.
Mm. And how do we stay more connected to each other? How do we share those experiences and then move others through those?
Well, I think it's different for each person. For me, I created a company in the last year. It's called B Tribe. And I based it off of Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey, because I really believe in my heart of hearts that we are all the teacher and we are all the student. And what holds us back is that we need to relinquish these patterns that hold us back and architect the life that we're meant to live. So I do these groups of 12, I curate groups of 12, and we go through a 6-month curriculum where we have the call to adventure. We go through the conflicts together. We hold each other accountable. There's a love and a tenderness and a service and an intensity around it. And we go through all the fears and the patterns that you have created. And then we cross that chasm, whatever that is, if it's a job, a traumatic past, deciding if you want to get married or get divorced or deciding if you want to have children. And I get to watch these people walk through this being held. And there's something about not being alone on that journey and being accountable to make the change that you have stated that you want to make in your life. And so for me, that's the piece that I want to give back, is to grow this business and have it to be accessible to anyone who would like to do it.
Mm. So btribes.com B, the letter B, then tribes.com is this organization that you're talking about. And you're talking about how you help reinvent and re-architect the life that especially women and young women, girls, are meant to live. And you talk about, you know, it's sort of finding your voice and how we don't often show up for ourselves in the way that we should as women. Can you comment on that? Where are we stuck?
I love that question. How fantastic. How we don't show up as women, I feel like that's a really important conversation because we will give to others before we give to ourselves. So I watch these women show up for the other women in the tribe, and a lot of the time I say, now what about you? And they say, oh, no, I'm fine. I'm sorry. So we need to lay down the I'm sorrys, and we need to pick up the self-care. And you're right. It's my turn here. Let me talk about what's going on with me. Instead, and you can still hold the other people and hold them accountable, but show up for yourself first. Show up and understand who you are and what your conflicts are in your life and what your patterns are that don't serve you and where you want to radically transform your life. And then trust that the B circle or B tribes or your friends can get you there. But getting there alone is really difficult. I believe it happens inside of a cluster of love and support.
That's nice. There's so many questions left unanswered in the book, and I think you just have to trust and go forward with it. But one comment you make, I think, in the afterword is that you no longer are in communication with your biological family. You found sort of a new family of people who do support and who foster positive support and empowerment in your life. I'm just so curious about your mother, and I guess maybe want to wrap it up with that. She no doubt learned how to toe the line. She was someone who didn't speak up for herself, let alone her children, in defense of you ever, really. Do you have any idea what has become of her?
I have contact with just one brother who's actually not listed in the book. He's 12 years younger than I am. And so I get some updates about how my parents are and my other siblings. But my mom, Lynn, that's the hardest one because she was the hardest for me to forgive. It took me the longest because being a mother now of three boys, I am a fierce protector of them. I allow them their own space and their own journey, and I believe in that as well. But I am their mama bear, and I didn't have that. And it got harder for me to forgive her as I realized how much children need in that realm. And so I know that they're both, you know, living, and I believe my father's probably living his own personal hell just because I believe that's what happens if you treat people the way he did.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not far from me. They're only about a half an hour from me. So, but I haven't bumped into them in several years.
Wow. Well, the book is Wholly Unraveled. It's a memoir by our guest, Keel Bergen. You live in Boulder, Colorado, not far away from us.
Mm-hmm. Well, otherwise known as Paradise.
Paradise, yeah. Wait, Park City's paradise.
No, Boulder is paradise. Park City is second best. We'll take it.
Right?
Don't tell anybody.
You can have it.
That's right. Well, thank you so much for writing this book and for joining us today on The Mountain Life. It's really an incredible work, so thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Bye-bye. Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows wherever you find your podcast. You can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or...